Hey, so I'm here with my colleague Emily Saul, who's in the courtroom every day covering the Elizabeth Holmes trial. And we are now really getting into the meat of this trial. Things are getting serious. One of the witnesses that the prosecution called was Justin Offen, a PricewaterhouseCoopers security expert, which is kind of a strange witness to call, but there's an explanation for it. He was there solely for the purpose of introducing texts between Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Balwani. And the reason for this is that before the trial, in pretrial hearings, the defense had contested the authenticity of these texts that the government wanted to enter into evidence. And the judge had sided with the defense and said to the government that they needed to do a better job of proving that the texts were authentic. And so to do that, they had to call the guy who actually had to go in and make a tape of Elizabeth's phone and of Sonny's phone. Emily, what did you think of Justin Offen's testimony?
Yeah, so, I mean, Offen came in. He was sort of what you would expect of a custodial witness. You know, he doesn't have any skin in the game except for the fact that he took the devices and processed all of them and made a spreadsheet containing all of the communications that he was able to pull from the devices between Sonny and Elizabeth. You know, it was a very cut and dry testimony, but these were some of the first instances in which jurors did get to see the communications between the two.
And the witness did read some of these texts, and prosecutors read some of them too, but it doesn't sound like the prosecutors gave a lot of context for them. And so that what that suggests to me is that prosecutors are just introducing the texts into the evidence, and they're going to come back to them later when other trial witnesses are called to the stand and place them in context.
Precisely. He created the spreadsheet, so he's there to basically be able to say, I made this under oath. I can attest that, you know, these are the texts, but he can't really say anything else. So it's, you very commonly see this in trials, and that a custodial witness will bring in something and the prosecution will return to it later.
And one of the things I was happy to see is that most, if not all, of those text passages that were introduced were exactly the ones that we had actors read in episode 3 of this podcast. All right, let's move on to the next witness, and that was General Jim Mad Dog Mattis. He was once a member of Theranos' board. He used to be a very strong supporter of Elizabeth Holmes. What was the point of calling Mattis to the stand? What were prosecutors trying to do there?
So Mattis was definitely there to establish a couple of things. One was that, he, as a member of the board, was repeatedly misled by Elizabeth Holmes. The other was that Theranos, at least to the best of his knowledge, as someone with a top security clearance, never had any sort of contract with the U.S. military.
Right. And of course, the latter point is important to establish before the next stages of the trial, when the prosecution is going to call investor witnesses. And they will testify to the fact that Sonny and Elizabeth repeatedly told them that Theranos had contracts with the military and that the Theranos devices were used in the field by the military, that they were on medevac helicopters. None of these things were true. And so someone like Mattis helps establish that this was fiction.
Absolutely. And I mean, Mattis himself was also an investor. You know, he testified he put in $85,000, which, as he said, for someone who spent their life in civil service, was no small amount to him. I mean, he also testified that, you know, he was attracted to this device because of its compact size. And so had he known that the Edison itself was not solely individually able to run the tests that Elizabeth told him it was, he would not have been interested.
Now, on cross, the defense tried to insinuate that he knew that Theranos had a central lab and that therefore he must have known that it wasn't just the Theranos device that the company was using, but it didn't sound like he agreed with that. It sounded like, his retort was, I always thought that we were using our own gear. Otherwise, what was the point?
He repeatedly said, when, you know, questioned about what he knew or didn't know, that no, he had no idea that third-party devices were being used or that other methods were being used, because again, he was interested in something that could go in a helicopter, that could go in a small boat, that could be used by, you know, during covert operations. So he definitely, again, returned to the point that he was interested in this device explicitly for its small size and, you know, purported ability to do many, many things.
Okay, so let's talk about the most important witness that was called so far in this trial, and that was the lab director, Adam Rosendorf. He is an absolutely pivotal witness for the prosecution. He testified that he tried to delay the launch. He repeatedly expressed concerns about the accuracy of the blood test, tried to get Theranos to revert to using ordinary machines. One of the key moments, I thought, was that he testified that he went to Elizabeth's office on the eve of the launch. It was about a week before the launch, I think he said. And she had a countdown in her office. She had the number of days left before the launch posted on the window of her office. And he went and he tried to get her to delay. He called attention to the fact that several of the assays, as they're known in laboratory speak, meaning blood tests, were not working well. And he also pleaded for more time. And he testified that she was pretty nervous, that her, I think he said, her knee was shaking, that her voice was trembling, and yet she did not heed his advice and she did not delay the launch. That seemed to be an important moment, no?
Absolutely. I think that was a, it was a very, he gave a very visual description. It was obvious that this was a memory that was really powerful for him. He, as he sort of walked through, you could imagine yourself walking into this office, seeing the, you know, countdown to the launch on the wall, and yeah, just her shaking, but saying that no, they were going forward with the launch, and, you know, dismissing the things that he had to say.
He had a powerful quote at one point during his testimony, which is that there came a point where he realized that the company didn't care about patients and it was all about fundraising and PR. Do you remember that?
Yes, he said versions of that a couple times. You know, it was a company he was excited to join. He said he thought it would be the next Apple, but pretty quickly his impression became that, you know, they were prioritizing publicity over patient care.
Another really important moment of his testimony is when they got around to talking about Theranos' pregnancy test results. And he clearly had major misgivings about the accuracy of their pregnancy tests. And the reason this is so important is just a few witnesses prior, the government had brought to the stand a woman who had received a false pregnancy test, who had been told by Theranos that she was miscarrying, when in fact her pregnancy was perfectly viable and she ended up having a baby months later. And it had also called her doctor. And both the doctor and patient were upset about what had happened. And here we have the laboratory director testifying that he himself was trying to raise alarm bells with the pregnancy tests.
You know, it's an abstract concept to talk about, you know, whether or not tests were or were not working. But just for this to come days after, you know, the testimony of Dr. Audra Zachman, a nurse practitioner, and her patient Brittany Gould come in. Brittany Gould had had a couple of miscarriages. And one of the things that both Gould and Zachman testified about is that, you know, you get to a point where if you have what is considered a non-viable pregnancy, which is what Theranos was indicating she had, you can either sort of let your body reabsorb or you can terminate that non-viable pregnancy. So, I mean, the results that she got from Theranos could have led for her to terminate a very, very, very wanted baby girl. And it was just because they didn't make that medical decision to terminate the pregnancy, but for Gould to reabsorb it, that they actually were able to determine that she was pregnant and she was able to go on and give birth to a healthy baby girl.
So another part of Rosendorf's testimony that's really important is that a lot of his emails were either directly to Elizabeth. He also met with her, as we said, right before the launch. Or they were to Sonny or Daniel Young, and they were forwarded eventually to Elizabeth, or she was CC'd on them. It seems like she knew, she had to know of his concerns, because she's practically on every single communication.
Yeah, it was actually really, especially after the defense's openings, where it's sort of, you know, we got the impression that this was just a young person who was in over their head. Every single communication, to the best of my recollection, that the government brought up was either directed at her or emailed to Sonny and Danielle Young, the vice president, and then forwarded to her. And a couple of them she even responded to. So she, I mean, unless she wants to claim that she wasn't reading her email, which I don't think would be very believable, she received a lot of these emails in which Dr. Rosendorf is very explicitly saying, this is not working. We need to not do this. We need to not be testing this on the Edison. We need to delay launch. Just a lot of emails making very, very clear that he was not confident in the technology and was adamant that it should not be used in any way relating to patient care.
So one of the ways in which the defense is going to try to impeach and discredit Rosendorf is to bring up the fact that after Theranos, he worked for two other labs that were also caught up in federal investigations. But it's unclear yet whether they're going to be able to do that because they have to clear it with the judge first. And the judge has to decide whether information from those other two investigations are relevant to this trial. That could be that could very well be a key moment, because if the defense is able to bring up this other information about these other companies, it could make Rosendorf look bad.
Most definitely. You know, I think it goes to the idea that, you know, if there are other labs that he was working at after Theranos that continued to have various issues that led to federal regulators being called in, I think it could affect the way jurors view him a little bit. That being said, I do think that the sort of the physical evidence that was brought in through his testimony, the emails, et cetera, will show that he, as you know, as an employee, as lab director at Theranos, did basically everything he thought he could to try and make sure that Theranos was not endangering patients.
So, Emily, I mean, this just seems like devastating testimony to me. And after Friday, after the day of testimony ended, you went to the Starbucks by the courthouse, and you often go there, I think, in the morning and sometimes the afternoon. And tell me what you saw there.
Yeah, so Friday was really rough. And just so after court, I'd walked over to the Starbucks, and inside, you know, Elizabeth and her mother, who's been there with her every day so far of testimony, were standing and waiting for an order. Holmes's body language was completely different. She's very aware of the way that she holds herself, and, you know, every single thing that she does in court. But this was sort of like in the Starbucks while she was waiting for her order. I think one of the first times that I feel that I've seen her with her guard down. And I mean, her back was to me, and she was, you know, looking at her mother, but they were standing very close. You know, it almost looked like her mother was consoling her. Her body language just looked totally defeated and exhausted. You know, her head was slightly bent, her shoulders were slumped. I mean, the inference I would draw is that she also felt like Friday was a very difficult day for her case.
All right. Well, the trial resumes this week with Adam Rosendorf's direct examination, followed by the defense's cross-examination, which we expect to be lengthy.